is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. The matter at hand for all of Europe is Ukraine. The decision by Berlin and Washington to vouchsafe the Nord Stream 2 construction to completion, to pass natural gas, the energy superpower of Russia, through a pipeline through into the Baltic Sea into Germany and their distribution. Why this is critical is that that ends or seems to end the opportunity for Ukraine to derive income from the transit of natural gas from Russia into Europe. That has been the issue for some years, but especially now because the president of Ukraine, Mr. Zelensky, is due in Washington at the end of next month to ask, to plea that this not go forward, that Washington reverse itself. Many other voices are being raised in Europe to reverse the decision made between Berlin and Washington. I note that Washington is explaining this decision on the basis of repairing alliances with Germany and Eastern Europe. But there are many unhappy European capitals. Anatole, this is your pay grade. This is responsible statecraft. When you can't make anybody happy, what is to be done? First of all, Ukraine's loss of income from the transit of natural gas is profound. The question is, will the authorities in Moscow use this as what is said to be weaponizing natural gas by beggaring Ukraine, given that they're in the midst of a fragmenting of the state with Crimea and Donbass now under the control of Moscow? Good day to you.
Hello. I certainly think Russia will use its leverage in this regard. My sense is, however, that unless a new conflict breaks out, Russia will not use this too ruthlessly. It won't, you know, simply cut off Ukraine because Russia is very anxious to maintain its reputation as a reliable provider of energy. And in fact, it has, you know, reliably provided energy to Europe now ever since the 1980s, and has never used the supply of gas to Europe to try to blackmail the West. Obviously, I mean, at the heart of all this also lies the fact that Russia, you know, needs the money from selling natural gas. I am not extremely worried by this. But what I think this does raise is the point that if the West truly wants to make Ukraine an ally against Russia, or regards Ukraine in this light, the West will have to pay for it. Up to now, Western aid to Ukraine has been a tiny fraction of the subsidized gas that Russia gave to Ukraine up to 2014. It's a case yet again of where, you know, Western generosity or even, you know, the strategic spending of aid does not match the rhetoric of Western ideals or ambitions. So, if we want to strengthen Ukraine, we have to pay. It's as simple as that.
The Ukrainian authorities in Kiev are extremely unhappy, to the point of news within these last hours. This is NBC reporting. Frustrated with the U.S., Ukraine is cutting deals with a rival superpower, inviting China to build infrastructure while holding back criticism of Beijing's human rights accord. Ukraine last month touted agreements with China to build airports, roads, railways in the Eastern European country, and expressed gratitude for deliveries of Chinese-made COVID-19 vaccines, the famous vaccine diplomacy. This is statecraft, again, Anatole. If you don't get what you want in Washington, go to Beijing. I don't see a negative here, perhaps the matter that Ukraine has to keep quiet on the Uyghurs, which is clearly a matter of presentation in the world of events. The Uyghur story is not going to be settled by Kiev's opinion one way or the other. However, this is following through on your thoughts that if the West wants Ukraine to be established, it must invest. China's shown up with a checkbook and Ukraine's going that way. Does this change the formula in any fashion from the point of view of Western Europe?
I don't think so. If China invests successfully in Ukraine, so much the better. You know, that strengthens Ukraine as a state and society. But China is never going to support Ukraine geopolitically against Russia. Russia is far too important for China. And also, the Chinese have shown no desire to make major military deployments outside their own region. They've been very cautious about that. So if the Ukrainians want to ask the Chinese for investment, fine, but I wouldn't allow that to affect our policies.
What are our policies? We're told that the conversation between Washington and Berlin was practical. However, the conversation was with Angela Merkel. There is to be a new chancellor of all the Germans soon enough. And one of the rivals for that post are the Greens. Is this all agreeable throughout the rest of Western Europe once Merkel leaves the scene? Are we likely to see more disorder because of Ukraine? You understand that Moscow can turn on provocations at a moment's notice in the Baltic states, in Syria and Ukraine. So how do you see the road ahead once Merkel steps off the stage?
It will certainly be more complicated. And as you say, the German Greens, oppose Nord Stream and are even more hostile to Russia. Nord Stream is an old story now. There has been, tremendous pressure on Germany from different sources over the years. But my sense is that the Germans have simply spent too much money on this. That the German establishment is very unwilling just to write off these billions of euros. That in the end, the Biden administration recognized this. And, for the sake of keeping a close friendship with Germany, and of course, keeping Germany in alignment with China, the Biden administration decided that they had to make a concession. So I could, of course, be wrong, but I don't think that a change of German leadership at this late date in the Nord Stream construction will bring it to an end or reverse it.
Final puzzle, Anatole. I learned from Ukraine Business News that Ukraine's economy is doing very well, thank you very much, even despite the cutback in fees for the transit of natural gas. There's a high demand for food, and food prices have skyrocketed, as you know, in London. And Ukraine is a food superpower. In addition, iron ore is in much demand. Ukraine turns out to be fertile ground for resources. At the same time, I'm told that Donbass and Crimea are North Korea. Is that now a ticking clock for Moscow to be maintaining a North Korean presence in the midst of bounty for the rest of Ukraine?
Well, if Ukraine becomes markedly more prosperous than these regions over the long term, then yes, because a key factor in everything that's happened since, the collapse of the Soviet Union has been that Russia has been much richer than Ukraine. And Ukraine, of course, declined steeply after 2014 as a result of the rupture of trade relations with Russia. But 2 points obviously to be made. The first is that, Ukraine's present growth, although very real, has not yet made up for the decline after 2014, let alone the long decline after the fall of the Soviet Union. So Ukraine still has a long way to go. The second point is that, as you said, Ukraine's growth is based on commodity exports, agriculture and iron ore. Now, I think we know from the example of Brazil and a number of other places that, a country which experiences a resource boom, chiefly by, providing resources to China, without really deep and successful domestic economic reform and without building a you know, a manufacturing and services independent of resources, you know, is not laying a good foundation for the future. So I think, you know, we would also still need to see, you know, much more in Ukraine. But of course, having said that, Russia itself is stagnating and certainly has not carried out successful reforms. So who knows? I mean, generally in the past, Ukraine has been more prosperous than Russia. Perhaps it will be again.
Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute commenting on the lengthy conversation about Ukraine these many years from 2014 to continue. But there's more trouble in the world than simply Europe. We're going to Afghanistan. This is CBSi in the World. I'm John Batchelor.